Hello, you lovely bunch, and welcome back to, yes, another episode of the Viva Live Show with me, Tori Ree, and me, myself, and Irene. I have nobody on this podcast, and there's a good reason for it. I also just want to say, if the sound quality sounds slightly different, I do apologise. I haven't got my headphones, and that is because I am currently in the middle of moving. So I have packed my whole life up not thinking that I needed my headphones. And I'm in the middle of a hotel because I also started a new job last week, and yeah, it's all decided to come at once. But the reason I actually chose to do this podcast and do this by myself is because it's something that I want to talk to you about just from my own personal experience, for once, to be perfectly honest. Obviously, with being Mental Health Month, and the last couple of episodes to kind of touching on mental health, I wanted to raise another topic that is getting more and more talked about, to be fair, and it's becoming recognised as something that so many of us deal with on a day-to-day basis. But it's still an area that I think is slightly taboo, or that us as individuals, we try and kind of not hide. That's not the right word. Hold up. My phone locked at the same time, so I'm just making sure that we're still recording. We are. Good stuff. Yeah, so it's an area that I think is still slightly taboo. So I'm going to give a bit of background for myself at first, and then I'd like to just delve into the topic a little bit more, I guess. So myself, I have probably suffered with a form of anxiety most of my life, often gone unnoticed, not unnoticed, but undiagnosed or unsure of what it really is, just thinking it was kind of bad days. I'm sure a lot of us, you don't really want to put a title on it. I'm one who doesn't really like titles as it is. So yeah, it's gone on for a long time. And then I think my kind of peak came around in about 2015, which is when I reached kind of like my ultimate low, and the kind of the darkest depression that I have personally experienced to date. But by going through this process, it really, in hindsight, it's always in hindsight, really enabled me to kind of truly understand the importance of going to those dark places and recognizing those kind of destructive self-talk behaviors, etc. And it was something I became aware of, and I sought help. So I went and started speaking to a counsellor, and didn't really get much out of it. So left her, continued to be in this dark place, thought, you know what, let me try again. Went to another one. This one was, I think it was through the council. So she was a local lady. She was slightly older, not being ageist here at all, but I just feel like she didn't really connect with me. She didn't really understand, and she wasn't really able to empathise. So I did a couple of sessions. It was nice to talk to her in those moments, but then I'd often come out of the sessions and still not really feeling too much better. As soon as something happened or someone spoke to me in a certain tone, or let me just uncross my legs. Oh, spoke to me in a certain tone or anything, I could be quite easily triggered. So I was like, okay, this still isn't working. And I left it. And I continued to kind of go down this rabbit hole of darkness. And it wasn't until later that year that I came across another counsellor. I was like, do you know what? This one's actually come recommended. Let me go and talk to her. So I went to see this woman. And I remember when I first walked in, like, she was just like a warm hug. I just felt immediately connected to her. And it started off, and I will always remember this. Started off and she was like, okay, like, well, this is one of the things that, I don't know if she started off with this, but it was definitely near the start. And she was like, okay, I just want you to recall a time when you were last happy. Yo, that shit's hard. When you're in a low place, it your brain can block out a lot of your happiness. So I don't know where you're at right now with your kind of like mental health, etc., but when you're in those low places, it can be tricky. So for me, I thought back to a moment in my childhood when I was carefree and not having to worry about other people's perceptions and how I was being perceived or giving out wrong, whatever, messages, da-da-da. And so I thought back to being a child and that kind of youthful moment. being able to be myself, I guess, was the key part. And she asked me to explain kind of where I felt it. So I'd like you to think about where you feel it, where you feel your happiness. For me, it was very much in my chest. Then it was a case of, okay, so you're thinking about where you're feeling it. And then it's a case of thinking, what shape is it? So what shape is that happiness? Then what color is it? Because we can use all of our senses without having to actually use our senses. Do you know what I mean? So for me, it was a circle. It was like an orb that was glowing and it was yellow. I guess quite the best example of it is similar to the sun, but it was in my chest. And that's what I felt when I was happy. So I acknowledged that feeling. I gave it its own kind of title and recognition. Anyway, carried on with the counselling, so on and so forth. Numerous sessions I went to over a period of however many months until I felt like I was in a place where actually I was starting to get my life a little bit more on track. I felt like I could take the stabilizers back off my bike and kind of ride for myself. So that's what I did. And it was funny because I actually remember this moment so closely as well. It was a couple of months after that, and I was out for dinner with my parents, and I had this overwhelming feeling in my chest. I felt like my chest was going to burst. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what's going on? And sure enough, it was that happiness feeling. And then I was like, oh, hold up a minute. What am I so happy for? I'm just out for dinner. And I was like, oh, this is what gratitude is. And I finally understood how closely related those two were. Obviously, by understanding gratitude and understanding what happiness felt like, it didn't just mean that I'd cured my anxiety or cured my depression. But it was able to, I was then able to kind of feel my feelings. And I think that was the significant part. So it's a case of then when anxiety arose, and it often would, especially in January, I feel like January is normally my season for it. Anxiety would arise and it was no longer this big orb feeling that I got in my chest, but it was one of pressure. You feel like it's pressing on your heart, on your lungs, like it's almost like you can feel pain. It's just this heaviness, darkness. And then you start noticing your thoughts are getting a little bit more intrusive and self-sabotaging. And maybe you cut yourself off from people. You start isolating yourself. You might label it as solitude, but it can often be isolation. And then that cycle can begin. But when you can recognize it and you can feel those feelings starting, it's a case of, okay, I'm recognizing this behavior right now or this feeling right now. I understand the kind of like the behaviors and emotions that will follow, and I'm going to accept that, but I am going to acknowledge it. I'm not going to wallow in it. I'm not going to snowball it because I don't understand it, but I'm just going to acknowledge it, observe it, and know that it's temporary. Because let's be honest, we've got through it all so far. And so it was actually only a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, January was only a couple of weeks ago. And it hit me again. It was completely out of the blue. Do you know what? The night before, I hadn't been out with my girls. I'd been at one of my girls' house, and we'd had one of the best nights. Singing, dancing, completely sobered. But just one of those, you know what I mean. One of those nights where you are a child again. And then the next day was a Sunday. And I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, I start my new job tomorrow. Then I move in like 2 weeks' time. Got loads going on, blah, blah, blah. And then something hit me and I started getting really anxious. It was like, okay, well, am I going to be able to do this job? Like, am I ready to move? Am I ready for all of these things that are happening in my life? Am I going to be able to succeed? What if I fail? What if this doesn't work out? What am I going to do? All of these thoughts started hitting me and I freaked and I broke down, completely broke down. I cried for maybe about an hour or so. But the difference that I have now, it's different for everybody, but working out works for you. For me, I decided that I was no longer ashamed of having these moments because they don't define me. Me having a good old cry about things that are completely out of my control doesn't mean that I'm not woke. It doesn't mean that I'm not self-aware. It doesn't mean that I'm depressive or depressed. It just means, you know what? I'm recognizing that right now, I'm not doing the greatest jobs of controlling my emotions or my thoughts, but I recognize them. And for me, I actually reached out to some people that I trust. And it's always a funny one because there's often more people will surprise you. Obviously, our circle of influence or our circle of friends can occasionally rotate. It can change, or you might be closer to one person in the group than another at some point. And you'll often be surprised that actually when you are in those positions of vulnerability, when you actually reach out to somebody just to have a vent, do you know what? They fucking listen. And I feel like one of our biggest, I don't want to say problems because it's not a problem, but one of the biggest things that kind of set us back from being able to move through these periods and what end up getting us into this snowball motion is getting scared of that vulnerability and getting scared of not being accepted. When the bottom line is, if anybody who you cared for, to be perfectly honest, I can pretty much bet you that anybody who you didn't even care for that much, or you didn't even know, if they called you crying, or if they called you saying, look, like, I'm not feeling too great right now, like, I'm feeling very, very anxious, I don't know how I feel, they're going to listen. You're not asking for advice, you just need somebody to listen. So this is kind of like my bid to people to just reach out, because do you know what? The majority of us are going through it, or have been through it, or have experienced someone close to us going through it. And no problem is too small. I think that's another thing that myself, and I know a lot of my friends, can quite easily do, is compare our problems to other people. You kind of fit into two categories. So either you are belittling your problems, thinking they're not as big as other people's. And then you've got the other people who are thinking, well, my problem's way bigger than yours. Why are you upset? But the fact is, it's all down to context. We're all going through the same shit, but we all just deal with it differently. And this reminds me of when I was younger. Sorry, this is a bit of a tangent one, but it's just, I felt like I had some bits to get off my chest. So when I was slightly younger, a family friend of mine, their hamster died. Okay. So I was probably like, I reckon I was about 13 at the time. They'd had this hamster maybe 6 years. It was quite an old hamster for as hamsters go. And I remember, and I was saying, and I was like, yeah, but it's just a hamster. Like, I've lost grandparents. I've lost a friend. Like, it's a hamster. Like, why are they even that upset? But the fact is, they'd never experienced loss before. They'd never experienced death. And this was something that they had in their home that they interacted with every single day for as long as they could probably really remember. And that pain for them was probably just as bad as losing a grandparent was for me, because it was that first experience of loss, that first experience of death. And then it really made me, once I kind of like got that into my head, I was like, wow, who the hell are we to judge? And whether you are the side of getting those anxious moments or the side of listening to people and supporting people when they are going through it, it's just always worth recognizing that we can't compare these things. What you feel is what you feel, and you just need to acknowledge it and roll with it. Obviously, here I am talking very generalized. I am talking on a high level and kind of putting an umbrella over different kinds of anxiety. But obviously, there are completely different levels to it. Not only are there different levels, but there are different types. So you've got your kind of generalized anxiety, which is what the majority of the population do experience at some point. So that can be just overthinking things, obsessive worrying, feeling anxiety about doing kind of your day-to-day tasks. You then got people who are just worrying more about social anxiety. So they feel a way about when they're around large groups or when they're having to talk to people. You've then got, like, obviously your specific phobias. So when you have like an irrational fear of something, it may be perfectly rational too. For example, you don't like to jump out of planes because you have a risk of dying. Like, that's a completely rational fear. An irrational fear might be something like spiders or dogs or bed sheets being made a certain way. Do you know what I mean? You then got the panic disorders, which is when you do go into like a full-on state of panic. Obsessive compulsive disorder, which is OCD. But again, that's a hard one to kind of bracket. There's so many different elements to that. I actually want to touch on one area of it that isn't talked about enough. I actually might get a guest on about this who actually introduced me to it. So it's actually OCED, I believe, which is like the umbrella term for OCD. And then you've got the different types of it. So it can be your, what we relate to as OCD, which would be like organizing your clothes in a certain manner or having to write in a certain color pen or those kinds of things. I have certain habits that I generally stick to, otherwise I feel a little bit uncomfortable. Some that you can live with, some that can have knock-on effects or detrimental effects, and that's when you may seek other help. But there's one other area that, like I said, I think I probably will get someone to talk about this because it's not my area of expertise, but I just want to talk about it. And that's intrusive thoughts. Obsessive intrusive thoughts, basically. So basically what that can be is when you have, it's almost like Tourette's of the brain is probably the best way that I can summarize it. So it's when you think of something that is the last thing that you want to think of, is a horrible thought, maybe it's a inappropriate sexual thought, or maybe it's a like something to do with like a murder or some kind of abusive thought. And they're not things that you'd ever want to act out on, but you start thinking about it. And then before you know it, you start thinking about it more and more and more. And this is a disorder. And it's one that is largely not talked about, yet relatively well seen within the population. But people get so scared of thinking that these thoughts that they're seeing will define them, that people will think that they are a certain way because they are thinking things that they don't want to think about. But there are other things that maybe you, if you do experience that, you can talk to somebody. You aren't alone at all. And then you've got PTSD as well. So you often see that with army veterans or people who have been through something relatively traumatic that can obviously come back and creep up on them. So, I mean, it's complicated. There is a whole network of different kinds of disorders and different causes as well. Generally, it will obviously stem from either like a psychological or a chemical trigger point, whether it's been something's happened in your past or whether it's just a genetic kind of disposition. But there are definitely things that can trigger them. And that's where we can kind of get more involved, not just in kind of like the core, the cure side of it, but in regards to the prevention. So environmental factors can be part of it. So it might be in regards to it, like a relationship, a job, school, financial thing. And they're the kinds of things that I think we really need to get on top of. Because they're the things that we can make immediate adjustments in our lives with. So, for example, I noticed that there's certain people that will trigger my anxiety, or certain scenarios or things that people might say will trigger it. So I've now got more self-aware to understand those feelings. So when you are going through anxiety, it's thinking about what you feel, where you feel it, what it looks like internally, recognizing that. And then I'm like, okay, I can feel this coming on now because I now know what to look out for and I can remove myself from it. Whether it's stepping away from those people, whether it's a case of, do you know what? I just need to go home. I need to go to sleep, or I need to go and have a bath and relax, or I need to read a book, or even if it's a case of, do you know what? I need to watch some happy TV to cheer me up. Then it's knowing those kind of feels and understanding the triggers of it, removing yourself and putting you into a safe zone. Apologies, I had to disappear for a second because someone knocked rudely on my hotel room door. But yeah, so obviously I have touched on the fact that anxiety is very much a feeling, being aware of it, being able to talk to people, the fact that there's so many different types of it. And it's not an easy one to define. But it is something that we need to acknowledge more, because anxiety left untreated, there's so many studies that show about half of the people who have anxiety and don't kind of act on it will also develop depression, which is obviously a mood disorder. Depression then can obviously have knock-on effects into other mental disorders and can have a very negative impact on your life as a whole. In that moment, I will just say, I think many people who have kind of been through depression and are maybe out of those darker times can kind of back me up in regards to saying that it shaped them. It's, for me, it's definitely been one of the best things to ever happen to me, if I'll probably say. Struggling with anxiety, obviously it can cause you a lot of issues, but it helps shape the choices that you make in future and now. It helps you become that better friend or partner or colleague or whatever, leader or employee, because you have a different perspective and a different sense of empathy. But it's also reminding yourself that anxiety isn't who you are. It's just something that occasionally will happen to you. It's part of being human. And although it can get messy, it's part of your plan. It's part of your journey. So I want to talk about a couple of things that do help kind of with anxiety. Just in regards to kind of different researchers and proven things and not just my own personal experiences. So one of the key things, and again, I think me and Josh touched on these things actually last week, to be perfectly honest, in regards to how to be happy. But I think there's some key parts that need to kind of be reaffirmed in regards to anxiety. So one of the main things is exercise. Anxiety when it's in the body is kind of like fight or flight in full swing. But the problem is the majority of times with anxieties, it is very much internal. There's not an external threat. So you're not actually having to fight anything and you're not having to run from anything. So there's nowhere to go. So you've got these stress hormones kind of just running around your body, and they start kind of forming these physical symptoms as well. That's why we feel anxiety. So doing physical activities actually like a natural end to that fight or flight response. So it is scientifically proven to balance out those neurochemicals in the body. So therefore it will have a scientific reduction in your anxiety. It helps you kind of put it somewhere, divert that energy. It's also worth kind of touching on food as well. Again, there is numerous studies to show that following a diet consisting of kind of more vegetables and fruit, etc., they're generally less anxious beings compared to those who follow kind of a more Western diet of processed or fried food. You are what you eat is a real damn thing. So if you're eating a lot of processed meat or KFCs or this, that and the other, you're probably taking on a lot of stress hormones, a lot of chemicals. If you're eating a lot of dairy, I mean, the amount of hormones in that, it was just obviously taking on a whole new level. And you're putting that in your body and your body's absorbing that. So I think it's really important to kind of fuel it with the things that it deserves. It can be very easy when you are in kind of that lower place of feeling anxious or depressed that either you don't really want to eat or you want to eat those comfort foods. And having the odd comfort food isn't anything to get mad at. If you want that little piece of chocolate, have some chocolate, but you don't need to sit there and eat a whole bloody share bar. Do you know what I mean? And maybe you actually, I'm going to eat some fruit first. If I'm still hungry, then I'm going to have this chocolate bar. Do I really need to go and eat a whole takeaway? Or can I make some food and maybe I'll just get a muffin afterwards to treat myself? Or maybe I'll make some homemade fries. It's just thinking about kind of those options and actually treating yourself just exactly the same way. I think the biggest thing to remember is the majority of things that you say in your head, you would never say out loud. You would never say that to a friend. And if a friend said that about themselves, you'd be devastated. You'd be like, do you know what? You deserve to feel good about yourself because you're a good person. And that's exactly the same thing with you. So if you have to kind of take yourself a bit of an out of body experience and look back and be like, do you know what? You're struggling right now. Let me do something for you. Let me make you eat some, or allow you to eat some good food. Sleep. Sleep is another thing that is huge. And a lot of people, I know you can struggle, especially when thoughts are going on in your brain. But I mean, some of the things that you can do to kind of help is leaving screens behind for at least like an hour and a half before you hit the hay. If you are having to look at screens, using blue light glasses, you can get them relatively cheap on eBay, but they will definitely make a huge difference in regards to being able to kind of switch off. So maybe instead of watching TV, if you don't need to look at a screen for any reason, it's worth putting your phone on airplane mode, having a bath, reading a book, listening to some music, whatever you need to do to just kind of divert yourself and unwind, let your body physically relax. So that's one thing that I did want to talk about is when you are anxious, you're generally going to be a lot more tense. Okay. So whilst you're having that before bed, or at any point to be perfectly honest, but before bed, think about how those muscles are tight, and you know what? Take control of them. So all you need to do is choose a muscle group, whether it be your butt, your quads, your shoulders, your biceps. Tighten it, hold it 5 seconds, then release it. Focus on one section at a time, then slowly work through your whole body. And this is what this is classed as progressive muscle relaxation. So that will really help you take control of the physical aspect of it and just let it kind of all go. Whilst you're doing that as well, it's breathing deep. I mean, we've talked about breath work, I'm sure, on numerous podcasts that has been dropped in. It's probably something that if you haven't heard of yet, you should definitely explore. But the power of breath and the way that we underuse it is redonkulous. I remember when Josh actually was the first person to show me breath work. And literally all I did is go on YouTube and typed in Wim Hof breath session. I think it was like a 15-minute breath session where Wim Hof guided me through these deep breaths, and it was breathing in fully but taking the air all the way down to my stomach. When we breathe, it shouldn't be a case of our chest just lifting up. This should be our whole stomachs expanding, taking the breath all the way down into the body, because there's so many parts of our body that have stagnant kind of oxygen in them. Like, we need to move it around. So it's breathing deep. Allowing that oxygen to kind of flood your body really helps your mind and body relax. The best way to do it is probably to lie down like on a flat surface, put your hand on your belly, slowly breathe in, and you make sure your belly is filling enough that you can feel it rise. Hold it for a second, then let it out and just let it relax. And I can tell you now, it's going to be a game changer. Another thing I could advise, I might come across a bit overwhelming with all these things, but it's just starting with one or two that appeal to you. I'm giving you a few different ones here because different things work for different people. But if they don't work, then you can maybe try some other things or whatever. So the other thing to do that I personally do, which may sound weird, but it's scheduling time to be anxious. So for me, it'll be like, do you know what? Before I go to sleep, not just before I go to sleep, like, so say I go to bed at like 10 o'clock, around 7:30, I'm going to dedicate 30 minutes to think about, solidly think about, what is bothering me. What am I worrying about? It's not about the different scenarios of what could happen, what could go wrong, or the self-sabotaging self-talk of you're this person, you're that, no one likes you. No, none of that. What am I actually concerned about? Why am I worried about people not liking me? What could be what's the worst outcome here? What am I worried could happen? Whether it's a phobia, what is the worst outcome here? What am I really worried could happen? And the more you can kind of focus on what makes you anxious, the more you can actually start to bring yourself back down and rationalize it. You're not letting these thoughts kind of just come into your head. Acknowledging them is such a key thing. It's just being that boss on your thoughts. So the more you dig deep, the more you're going to be able to kind of flick those thoughts. Do you know what I mean? You're able to look at those negative thoughts, acknowledge them, and then understand the positive aspects of them. Do you know what I mean? Like, nothing in this world is one way. We need the kind of the bad to recognize the good. It's yin and yang. You need both inside you. You need the angel and the devil. So when you do have these negative thoughts, there will always be a positive aspect to it, whether it's a positive outcome that could happen or a positive feeling or an awareness. You've gone through something to be aware of something. That's one of the keys. It's being a boss, taking control of it. However hard you think it might not be possible, I can tell you now it is. It might not be easy, but it's possible. You've just got to take the time. Another thing to think about, and this is something that I have been doing again as of late. I read a book last year and it changed the game. I will tell you what book it is, but I really can't remember. But it's about relabeling. So it's the way that we talk about our feelings to ourselves can have an enormous impact. But a lot of these things are very, very similar. So for example, earlier, when I was talking to you about me feeling gratitude and getting excited or whatever, it's actually a very similar feeling to when I'm getting anxious. I feel it in my chest. I feel a pound, but I just have a different label to it. So it's like, for example, say you have performance anxiety, right? So you're scared of not living up to an expectation or not delivering on something that you have to deliver on. It's like, actually, am I nervous? I did a post on this at some point, actually. I'll try and find it. But it's like, am I nervous or am I excited? Because the feelings are very, very closely linked. So as soon as you're actually able to switch that and be like, do you know what? No, actually, I'm excited about this. This is a big challenge. Rather than being like, this is a big challenge, shit, what if I fuck it up? No, this is a good challenge for me to show myself. You relabel that emotion, that feeling, and all of a sudden the outcome is completely and utterly different. You no longer have these expectations of not living up, because you could do an amazing job. But if you have this kind of like performance anxiety, you're going to pick on everything negative that's happened rather than going in there, seeing it as your opportunity to deliver and delivering. You could do exactly the same speech, but it's all down to interpretation and your own perspective. And that's where it's in your control. The next thing, which links loosely to my previous point, is people with social anxiety, for example, often think that they don't come across well, or any kind of anxiety, to be perfectly honest. You can get paranoid about what other people are thinking. But one thing it's worth reminding yourself is when you are in these kinds of mental places, you are a lot more sensitive to others. It's exactly the same as kind of like when you're in regards to like personal space. I know for me, when I am anxious or depressed or whatever, I'm very aware if someone's standing too close to me. You become hypersensitive to things. And it's often exactly the same way in regards to how you act as well. So you can listen to how people word things and you take it really to heart. And you can then often become very conscious of how your words are being perceived. And you start getting anxious because you're worried about how people are going to see you, whether they really like you. But I can tell you this now. You're good. I can guarantee you now the people around you are not thinking any kind of thing about you. So if you struggle, just remember that when you let people see you like the real you, they actually really like you. And if they don't, then that's an issue that they have within their own internal self. Because all we can do is be true. I think that kind of covers the main aspects of anxiety from my perspective. Like I said, this is obviously very much a general umbrella discussion on it. But I just felt like it's something that we need to discuss more. I posted on my social media that evening after my anxiety attack. So still red-eyed. And I got a lot of feedback where people were like, wow, like, I go through this too. Thank you for being honest about it. And I think that's the thing. Like, us actually wearing our truth on our sleeve and not being ashamed of
who we are and what we've experienced is only going to inspire others to do exactly the same. And the more that we can share our experiences, the more we can learn from each other, the more we can get through this, the more strength we have as a collective. So that's all for now. Bit of a different one, me just talking to myself. I need to go and blow my nose now because I've talked for too long. But thank you guys so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. As always, I would ask you to please kindly review the podcast. Give it a subscribe so that you are alerted whenever the podcast next goes up. And please let me know your feedback, either messaging via the Viva Life website or my own Instagram, which is at Tori Ree. And just let me know your thoughts, or let me know if there's any topics in particular you would like covered. But for now, let's keep pushing through. Whatever your year's been like so far, we're not even a quarter of the way through yet, so let's push it. I'm thinking about you. I'm always here for you. And yeah, love you. Peace out.